Hi there, I'm Corey Rabin, and welcome to Crosstalk Podcasts. And today we have a terrific episode for you. This is our virtual episode of Crosstalk, not our typical one, but sometimes we make exceptions when there's a special guest, and today is such a day. And I want to welcome Louis Essig to Crosstalk Podcast. Hi, Louis.
Hi, thank you so much.
Let's start, with more of a personal discussion, your personal journey. Sure. Wherever you want to start, but how'd things start in the life of Louis Essig?
Yeah, I'll qualify myself. So my sobriety date is July 3rd, 2016. Gives me just over 8 years, which is a miracle. I was not in very good shape for quite some time. My mother passed away as a result of this disease 4 years ago of an overdose. My sister is currently in recovery. She's got just over a year. So, she's battling with it. I lost my grandfather to cirrhosis of the liver, and I lost my grandmother, both on my mom's side, to suicide. She killed herself. So that being said, it's safe to say that, my genes are a little bit questionable. And alcoholism runs deep in my blood.
Well, I'm glad there's some good stories, your sister and you, and I'm really sorry about all the other losses.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that with my mom is, I wasn't able to just like wave a magic wand over her and get her sober. Believe me, I tried, but when she passed, what made it a little bit easier was I understood why it happened, exactly why it happened. So that made it a little bit easier.
When you say you understood why it happened, could you give me a little bit more about what that means?
Yeah. So, she was alcoholic, just like me, right? And we know that there are three options, right? Jails, institutions, death. Those are the options. You get sober, you get locked up, or you die. And knowing that she had the disease of alcoholism, right? And understanding it so well because of my lived experience and, everything I've seen over the past however many years, it just made sense. And I say that because, so unfortunately, I lost my dad to cancer last year. So in comparison, I guess is what I'm saying, like with my mom, I understood it because I understand the disease and I understand why she passed. With my dad with cancer, it was more like, this is bullshit. This doesn't make any sense, right? So that's kind of how I look at it.
Your dad was a young guy.
What's that?
Dad was a young man. He was 60s?
73.
Okay.
73. Smoked two packs of Marlboros a day his entire life. Made it to 73 and was still smoking cigarettes up to the end. And I don't blame him one bit. I would have done the same thing.
Yeah, well, you've had your share of losses. How was growing up for you in your house? Was it a lot of insanity with a lot of alcohol abuse?
So it wasn't insanity. I always describe it like this, right? So I'm like a 93 Honda Civic, right? Like me as a person. And my dad was like the engine, right? And the engine and that baby can go for 300,000 miles. But then my mom's side, the car is all beat up, dinged up, you know what I mean? But it still drives. It still drives great. So as a kid growing up, I did not want or need for anything at all. I grew up in a well-to-do community. I grew up in Columbus, Ohio. The community I grew up in is it's called Grandview Heights. It truly is a typical white picket fence, American community. My household, yes, my mother was alcoholic, but as a kid, I didn't see it. and it didn't really disturb my life. So, you know, growing up, I was active. I played sports. I participated in everything. I had friends. I was decent at school. I got good grades. I can tell you that ending up addicted to drugs was not really in my playbook. Never would have guessed it in a million years. When I got to fifth grade, that was the first introduction to any information about alcohol and drugs. And it was DARE. I don't know if you remember DARE. But yeah. They came in and they said, just say no, right? And I'm a fifth grader. I'm young. I'm a kid. And I'm sitting there and it scared me. And I remember thinking, like, if I abuse alcohol or use drugs, it is going to ruin my life. And not only is it going to ruin my life, but it will ruin my life immediately. I was under the impression as a child that there would be like immediate consequences. So if I go out and have some beers, the next day everything's going to burn to the ground. And so that's what I knew as far as drugs and alcohol as a fifth grader.
Do you think that the message that you were given was clear and you didn't understand it? Or was the message kind of a stupid message?
I don't think I can say it was a stupid message, because at least there was a message, right? And I say that because, so again, and I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but fortunately today I go into my old high school and middle school, and I speak to the eighth graders and the ninth and 10th graders, and I get to tell my story as is. And it's not a scared straight thing. It's just a, hey, this is what happened to me. Give them some information about drugs and alcohol, even about the law, right? You know, some of these kids get Adderall to study. They don't understand if they get pulled over and the cops find that Adderall in their car, it's a felony possession charge. So the message that I'm delivering now is obviously very different than DARE. But again, at least there was a message. Right. But, it didn't obviously do anything for me, unfortunately.
So growing up, sports, fifth grade, DARE, and you're taking us to, I guess.
Yeah. I'll take you to eighth grade and that transition from middle school to high school. I remember being very nervous, very anxious. The big thing for me was fitting in and belonging. That's what I wanted, right? And I was very nervous going into high school about that, right? Am I going to fit in with the older kids? Am I going to, I'm going to be on the football team. I'm tiny. Like, those are the things that are going through my mind. How am I going to fit in? How am I going to belong? And my freshman year of high school, didn't touch a drink or a drug. Made honor roll. Can't take that from me. It was the only time I did it, but I did make honor roll. And things were very normal. My sophomore year, 16 years old, I remember watching some of my best friends start to go out to parties. And I grew up with these kids, K through 12. So I've known them my entire life. And I would watch them on the weekend go out to a party and they'd have some beers and maybe they'd smoke some weed. And they'd come back on Monday and lo and behold, nothing happened. They're passing their tests. They're going to practice. And so I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, well, obviously DARE was bullshit because nothing is happening. And, I remember Thanksgiving break my sophomore year, I finally went to a party and I went to that party and I drank some beers and I smoked some weed and it was amazing. I loved it. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and tell you I didn't. It was a very fun time. I remember I could talk to girls. I was funny. I came back to school Monday and people were coming up to me. Oh, Lewis, that party was so fun. That was so cool. And I was like, this is it. This is the missing piece.
You got connected.
Like, yeah, I fit in now. I found it. And I remember thinking to myself, okay, so there weren't immediate consequences, but I want to take it easy. I don't want to do this too much, maybe once a month. And so, my sophomore year was more kind of experimental stuff. By my junior year, I was definitely using marijuana daily. other substances started to pop up, you know, maybe a painkiller here, an Adderall there. Got into some like psychedelics. So, you know, I was using anything that was put in front of me.
Did you find, were you in any situations that made you start scratching your head a little bit, or really no consequences?
Not yet. No, not in high school. My senior year, I started my own little business, you know, started selling some stuff to try and pay for my habit. And I got to tell you, my favorite thing about that wasn't the money. It was my phone ringing. I loved the fact that people needed me. That felt incredible. You know, I had absolutely zero consequences. Still played sports. My grades were good enough that I got into a good school. I only applied to one college. It was Ohio University, and they have an awesome Halloween party. And so that is quite literally the reason I applied to that school, was because of their Halloween party. And I was like, cool, I'll just go down there and party and pick up where I left off. This is fantastic.
I identify with that completely, because the only reason I went to law school after college, because it was three more years I could party.
Yeah. Yeah, it made perfect sense, you know, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. I honestly had no idea. The thing that was really hard is we're very privileged in Grandview, and the expectations were super high. So it was like, in my mind, I thought I was supposed to go to college, get a degree, get a job, have a career, get married, have kids, buy a house, white picket fence. Like, that's what I was supposed to do. So the summer between my senior year of high school and my freshman year of college, I was introduced to OxyContin. This was in 2009. And I went over to grab my regular stuff. And, you know, he was like, hey, do you think you can sell these? And I was like, sure, probably. I went home and I was like, well, I can't sell them without trying them. I got to know what I got here. And I tried OxyContin for the first time. And that was it. That was perfect.
That became your drug of choice. That became your drug of choice.
Yeah, 100% opiates all the way.
So before we get into the opiates, because I have a feeling things are going to accelerate at this point.
Yes.
I just want to dig into something you said earlier, and sure. It's kind of been gnawing at me. The thing that you liked most when you were like in the later years of high school is that your phone was ringing. What do you think's behind that? Because that's an important fact, and it's probably something that's still with you, I imagine, as you go through your life.
Yeah, it was power. It was power. You know, like, I'll speak for myself. I'm inherently selfish as an alcoholic, right? And so, if someone called me and maybe I can, you know, I can make them wait. I can make you wait an hour. You know, you're on my time now and you need me. And, you know, girls would call me for stuff. You know, it was just, I loved the feeling of being needed and like being somebody. It felt like I was somebody, which is insane because I was just selling some drugs. I wasn't really anyone, but it sure felt like it.
Also, a component of it might be control, because yes, you had what they wanted, and it was not just an economic thing. It was a time thing, and it was attention. And it's an interesting kind of digression into the story. The drug-a-log that we all have in our stories is only moderately interesting, but that piece of information I find fascinating, and I identify with it as well.
Yeah, it took me a while to understand that, and even realize that I enjoyed it, right? You're right. It's a very important part of my story. It just all goes back to that wanting to fit in piece and that wanting to belong.
That's exactly right. I think that's right. And by the way, when we get a little bit further along in this interview, you're going to be able to use those same skill sets in a very positive way.
Okay.
At least that's what I think. I knowing what you're doing, to help other people, I think you can turn that same approach into something that's very healthy and very positive and does a lot of good.
Absolutely.
So you find Oxy, and yep. This is in a period of time during which Oxy is much easier to get than it might be today.
Yes. So, I mean, 2009, I was a little late to the game, but I wasn't too late to the game. And yeah, like those pills were everywhere. And when I picked up the habit, I was in a situation where I had the means to use every single day. So I started using OxyContin, and that was it. I was off to the races, did not stop. So, you know, that summer, do my thing, drinking, drugging, whatever. I get down to Ohio University, and I made it. They were quarterly back then, and I made it 2 quarters before I dropped out. And I didn't drop out because of my grades. I didn't drop out, you know, because I was struggling to get to class or anything like that. I dropped out because I was uncomfortable. I remember calling my father on the phone outside of my dorm, bawling my eyes out, telling him that I couldn't do it. And when I look back on it, it was the same thing. Lewis was the man in Grandview, right? But once I got down to Ohio University, I was nobody again. And I had to go through that whole uncomfortable experience of meeting new people and meeting new friends. And, you know, where am I going to fit in down here? I couldn't figure it out. And the booze and the drugs weren't really working, you know? I would go to parties, but there was never any meaningful relationships or anything that came out of it. And I dropped out of college. And, you know, I look back on that, and especially some of the things I've seen, you know, in the past 8 years in my sobriety, I was very lucky to even have an opportunity to go to college. A lot of people don't get that. And I squandered it. I dropped out, and I came back home, and I told my dad I was going to go to OSU, Ohio State. I knew I was never going to do that. And I got a job at this burger place. And I moved back home, moved in with my girlfriend, and went back to selling drugs and, you know, drinking, using. And I had that job just to keep my dad off my back so I could say, you know, Dad, I'm working. You know, I'm working here. We're good. No legal trouble, no nothing. Now,
how old are you at this point?
I am 20 years old.
So you're selling drugs, you're flipping burgers, and you got a girlfriend that you're living with.
Yeah. Yes. Around 2000, I want to say 2011, 2012, Purdue Pharma stepped in finally, and they changed the formula to OxyContin. They made it so you couldn't crush it up, couldn't snort it, couldn't shoot it, couldn't really abuse it. And I remember hearing that this was going to happen. It was like this mythical thing, like, oh, they're going to do it. They're going to do it. And when they did it, the price of pills, the ones you could abuse, went through the roof. And it was like heroin just appeared out of nowhere. Heroin just flooded the streets. And so I'm at work one day at the burger place. And at this point, I found out I was physically dependent on opiates, that I would get sick if I didn't have them. And so I'm at work, I'm sick, I don't have any pills, I'm flipping burgers over a hot, you know, flat iron stove. And the people at work knew what I did. And one of my coworkers came up to me. He's like, hey, I can get you something that'll make you feel better. And I'm sick. And I'm like, please. Okay, sounds great. And he goes out back. He comes back in and he gives me a bag of heroin. It was a freebie too. It was free. And so I went into the bathroom. I locked the door. And I snorted a line of heroin for the first time on the baby changing station in the bathroom on the clock at my job. And I always tell people that if that does not give you an idea of the complete and total disregard I had for my life at that point, I don't think anything will, because normal people don't do that.
Yeah, I mean, nobody would do it on a baby changing table.
You know what's funny about that is it almost became like those were made to do drugs on gas station bathrooms, you name it. But yeah, man, I you know, didn't think about it. Maybe I overdosed. Maybe this. Maybe, no, just wanted to feel better.
And you felt better.
I did. And after that, it was a full on like toilet bowl spiral for me. Eventually, girlfriend left me, lost the condo we had. I got fired from my job, and I moved back home with mom and dad. And Corey, I've been talking about this more recently publicly. I didn't used to talk about this, but I mentioned my mother was alcoholic, right? And when I moved home, I was unemployable. I had no meaningful relationships in my life. I couldn't keep a dollar in my pocket. And started using with Ma. And the thing about that is when I share it, especially in large groups, I look out into the crowd and I see people nod their heads. Yeah, you know, I've been there. And I see people that look disgusted. Like, why would he do that with his mother?
Why would his mother do that with him?
There's that too. It's actually really funny you say that because I've never considered that. I always just bared the responsibility. But you know, I share that with people, and some people get it, some people don't. And you know, mom kind of became my partner in crime. So I moved back home, and at this point, I'm really bad off. And I had a buddy who had gotten sober. He had 6 months at the time. And unfortunately, he has since passed away of an overdose. However, he took me to a recovery meeting. And I don't know why I went. Can't really explain it, but I did. I agreed to go with him. And I listened to this guy speak. His name was Noah. And he told a story, kind of like I'm doing today. And when he finished, you know, I went up to him and I thanked him and I said, thank you, you know, thank you for sharing that. But there's one major difference between you and I, because I want to look for the differences. I don't want to find the similarities because there's no way I'm as bad as him. And I told him, I said, you know, you have been in legal trouble and I haven't yet. You know, I must be doing something right. And he looked at me and he said, keep doing what you're doing and it will come. And you know, the thing about that, Corey, I walked out of that room thinking he was the biggest dumbass I've ever met because I'm smarter than him. You don't know who I am. You don't know me. I can outthink you. I can outmanipulate you. I'm not going to end up in the back of a cop car. Give me a break. And 6 months later, I was in the back of a cop car for the first time. Got taken out of the county jail. They booked me in for a misdemeanor. And they found a bag of heroin in my coat during the booking process, which turned it into two felonies. So there I am, you know, 23 years old. I'll never forget when that deputy pulled that bag out. He kind of waved it in front of my face and he was like, that's two felonies right there. And my heart just sank to my stomach. My life was over in that moment. I really believe that my life was over.